We all know that there's something called the Protestant work ethic, as it describes here on Google. Sometimes it describes the Calvinist work ethic, the Puritan work ethic. It's a work ethic, it's a concept in theology, sociology, economics, and history, which emphasizes that hard work, discipline, and frugality are a result of a person's subscription to the values espoused by the Protestant faith, particularly Calvinism. So I don't know that much about it, but we hear this idea of a Protestant work ethic. And I want to argue that really we should speak of a Jacobean work ethic, of a work ethic promoted particularly by our patriarch Jacob, and therefore a Jewish work ethic, a biblical work ethic. Again, I'm not saying that Calvin didn't invoke Jacob. I'm not familiar. I don't know. But certainly we need to invoke Jacob as the source of the notion of a strong work ethic. So let's begin at the beginning. Here we go. The Jacobean work ethic, work ethic based on Jacob, our forefather. So we start with a Midrash. And I'm sorry, most of the sources today were not available in English, but I did translate most of it. But give me a little time to translate this. The essence of this passage is as follows. Beloved is work, that of all the creatures that God made, he only gave work to the humans. Okay? So there is an opposite view expressed in Gemara and Kiddushin that we're the worst creatures. The other animals, they just sit around and they get their acorns and they're no problem. We're the only ones who have to work. I'm not sure that's fully true from a biological point of view. I think the animals sometimes have to scrounge around hard for their food as well. But more or less, food is available for them. But the human being is the only one that works. Is that because of our sinfulness? Or no, because it's great. Work is great. Beloved is work. Because of all the creatures, only the human being works. It must be a very exalted thing to work. There's a Midrash Tanaim. It's associated with perhaps the school of Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai on as the Sifri of Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai on Devarim. Anyway, it's a Midrash on Devarim, and it says, don't do any work. On 6 days, you should work. And the seventh day, you should not do any work. So he says, Shabbos is very amazing because God forbade work which God loves, because after all, God made the world. Lo bigyev lo bamal, Rab Riyad Olam Malacha. Even though God made the world without any work, it didn't. There was no hard labor involved for God, but He called it. As it says, God finished his work that he did because he rested from all his work. So we see that that Shabbos is so amazing because it overrides work, which is so beloved, which God himself chose to call it work. Work is beloved, he says. This Midrash says, God didn't give the notion of work to any other creatures, only to the human being.
But we as animals,
and so Rameyer said, that's a good point. True. But not in a natural state. He said, did you ever see a lion in nature? Not one who's domesticated, but a lion. Did you ever see a lion who's a porter for somebody who had to work as a porter? Or a shual, Kareem, or that a fox had to work as a vineyard keeper, you know? Or they get away without any work. But it must be that work is very beloved. Again, there's another version of this that, we're so sinful, God, we have to work so hard. If we were just better, then we wouldn't have to work. But these sources I'm going to show today are very much in favor of work. Chaviv HaMlacha, this continues. Love it is work because of X. Gilam Lacha, work is great because of X. In this case, Chaviv, it's beloved. That work is beloved because we would have had everything, but then when Chava came along, then we had to work. So it must be that work is something that we need to do, because after all, when we got married, we had to work. I have to think about that one. Chaviv HaMlacha Shekol Yivin Nisaskuba. This is the key. Malacha is beloved because all the prophets engaged in it. Jacob engaged in it. Moses, David, and Amos. Let's see. He says here, with comes to Jacob, it says, Ashuva, Jethro. And David was taken from the work of the sheep. And Amos, he says, Vokerani Anochi. He's a voker. He's a person in charge of cattle. And God took me from the sheep, it says, with regarding David. So also, Chaviva Malacha Shalosh Sheberkesh Baruch Hu, Zochem Malacha, why did God pick Elisha the prophet, to be the prophet after Elijah? Again, there was Elijah, Eliyahu, and Elisha, Elisha. Why did God pick Elisha? Because he was working. He found him and he was plowing. And Eliyahu said to him, go back to work. It's okay. So he didn't want to stop him from working. He says, most mitzvahs are work, except for like thinking, Torah, tefillah, but a lot of mitzvahs are work. And finally, and Shabbos is even greater, as Shabbos stops the malacha, which has all these, stops you from working, which has all these great qualities. Okay. So we have these sources, this tremendous collection of rabbinic statements that malacha, that work is very beloved to us. I just ask everyone to mute, I'd appreciate. Now, Jacob, and let's read about Jacob and work, because they alluded to Jacob. So let's take a look. And that's this week's Parsha. This week's Parsha, Yaakov is trying to get married. So he works, as Charlie pointed out before. First, he works for 7 years for Rachel. Then he has to work for another 7 years for Leah. And then he agreed to work even further until about 20 years. Definitely Jacob was involved in a lot of work. But in the context of Jacob's story, we learn not just that he did a lot of work, but much more. So he says as follows. He says, Laban says to him, his father-in-law says to him, what can I give you? So he says, don't give me anything. If you do this, I'll go back and work for your sheep. So that's what the source we saw before was saying. He chose to go back to the sheep. He could have left or whatever. He said, I will go back and work for your sheep. It was a bad thing. He wouldn't have done it. Now, some of you may find this whole discussion kind of strange. Like, who says there wouldn't be a work ethic? I mean, why wouldn't there be a work ethic? So there is an idea, which is propounded by not only many Haredim today, but also some rabbis. Is just to study Torah all the time and not to work altogether. But even if you have no relation to that idea, some people I've told that idea to, they're like, what does that mean? But even if you couldn't relate to that at all, we have a work ethic beyond simply that you should work, that it's good to work. But here, Jacob chooses to work. The Birkat HaSher says, anything. Don't give me anything. It's a contemporary commentary. He says, Laban wanted to give Yaakov a one-time gift. He says, look, what can I give you? I'll give you something and then you work for me forever. He says, no. I don't want to take any gifts from you. I want a salary. I don't want to take government handouts. I want a salary. I want to live based on what I work for, on my work. So that's, we see the work ethic a little bit in that particular episode. Then Jacob gets really mad at Laban. Laban accuses him of stealing. When he ran away from Laban, and he says, what, stealing something? He said, I worked for you for 20 years. I never, your ewes and your she-goats never miscarried. What does it mean they didn't miscarry? He helped birth them properly, or he fed them so well that they were healthy, they had healthy children. And Laban chalo achalti, he says, I never ate any of the fat rams. He says, from your flock? I never did that. Trefalo ebeti alecha. So now it says, that which is torn by beef, I never brought to you. What does that mean? I made myself good the loss. If a wild animal came and ate a sheep, I would come at the end of the day and say, father-in-law, here are your 20 sheep. Yeah, but one of them was eaten by a lion. He says, no, I took care of that. I bought another one for you. He would be responsible. If a sheep was mauled, he was responsible. You exacted it of me. You would demand it, whether snatched by day or snatched by night. This is one translation. We'll see another later. That whether something was stolen during the day, I paid for it. I said, what? If on my guardship, on my watch, a sheep was taken, I'll pay for it. If a sheep was taken at night when I was trying to sleep, I paid you for it. I was there during the day. Of course, I was a worker. And at night, I was ravaged by the heat and the frost. I sleep fled from my eyes. I could barely sleep. We'll see later. Why couldn't he sleep? I worked for you for 20 years, 14 years for your two daughters, 6 years for your sheep. And you changed my wages 10 times, time and again. He worked hard. He took responsibility for his work. He worked day and night. He worked cold. He was like the postman. He worked whether it was cold, he worked whether it was hot. Now, Rashi takes a simple interpretation reflected by the translation you just saw. Whether it was stolen by day or by night, I paid it back. We'll see another interpretation later. The Yosef HaChoshua was also a French rabbi like Rashi, and he said, I was so careful in guarding that I did not sleep like others. And because I knew that I did my work so faithfully, how could you have suspected me of robbery? So he says, my sleep fled from my eyes. I was busy. I was so careful with my guarding that I couldn't sleep because I was busy guarding, not like other people. Now, that's very nice that so far we saw a story of Jacob, right? Jacob's a great guy. He worked really hard. Maybe Jacob was a weirdo. Jacob was a fanatic. He was a workaholic, right? Comes the Rambam, Maimonides, and says, this is a law. We're supposed to learn things from Jacob. Just as the employer is warned against robbing the wage of the poor workman, just like there are rights for the boss, that there are some laws on the books that are designed for the employer and against delaying it, right? Many laws are for the employee, for the poor workman. You can't delay the wages. You have to pay the wages on time. And this is at the end of the laws of hired workers. So is the poor workman warned against robbing the employer. It's not just the employer has to make sure he pays his wages on time. The employee has to be warned against robbing the employer by idling away his time on the job. You can't sit idle when you're supposed to be on the job. A little here, a little there. Thus, waste the entire day deceitfully. Right? He's just going to take a 5-minute break here and a 5-minute break there. He says, "You know that with all your strength, with all my strength, I have worked for your father. For this reason, he was rewarded because it says the man became exceedingly rich. If you look in the Hebrew, by Yifrot Saish, Me'od Me'od. It's a double superlative. He became very, very wealthy." And why? It was a reward because he took his work so seriously for his father-in-law. Well, anyway, so we read the Rambam. It's not just that there's a story that Jacob worked hard. He didn't waste any time. There's an interesting source for this Rambam. It's a Tosefta. This Rambam is not stated like explicitly in the Talmud. You have to look in the Tosefta. In Bava Metzia, there's a Tosefta. There's a book that not everyone reads. It's found in the back of the Talmud. It's its own book. It's written in the days of the early Talmud, the days of the Mishnah. And it says as follows. The worker cannot do his work at night and hire himself out during the day, right? You can't say, I'll work the night shift at Baptist and I'll work from 12 to 7 in the morning. And then I'll go to the Methodist and I'll work from 7 to 7 the next day. You're going to be conked out. You can't do it. Plowing one field. And then in the morning I say, oh, Charlie, I got a great cow for you. Have I got a cow for you? And I give it to you. And the cow doesn't want to do it. Make himself famished and give away his. In other words, if you're a worker, you say, well, I'm not going to eat anything. I'll give away my lunch allowance. No. You're stealing from the boss. You should eat lunch. Eat lunch, you'll be stronger for the afternoon. No. You can't give your kids the food. The food is for you. This is your lunch. Your lunch hour, and we're serving lunch, and we expect you to eat lunch. So you'll be strong so you can continue working after lunch. Otherwise, you're stealing from the balabais, from the boss. So we have, so the Rambam got it from the Tosefta that there are specific laws about this. The Vilna Gaon says that there's another source for the Rambam, above Metzia, page 91b. In the Mishnah, it says, he says, look, the Torah says an interesting thing, that it seems to say the following, if you're walking through someone's vineyard, you can take as many grapes as you want, but don't put them in a basket. Now, don't be a chazer. If you're walking through someone's field, you can take a few grapes, but don't put them in your basket. The rabbis say, really? You can walk through someone's field and take grapes? That's not true. What it means is, if we're talking about a worker, that if you're working in someone's field, in the grape industry, then while you're working in the grapes, you can take a few grapes. But don't put some in your pocket and take them home for your wife and kids. You can't do that. You've got to just eat a few grapes. Just, we don't want to muzzle you. While you're working with grapes, you get hungry, you're allowed to have a few grapes, but you can't bag it in a bag. So comes the Rambam, and he says, all right, that's what it says in the Torah, but let's define it further as defined in the Talmud. As the Talmud says, Lo amar al b'shas melacha. While you're working with grapes, you can have a few grapes. But theoretically, when you take a break, at lunch break, you can't take any grapes. Only while you're working, you're cutting off the grapes. You can take a few to eat. But once you take a lunch break, you can't do it. But let's say you're going from this row to that row, or this vineyard to that vineyard. So you say, well, you're in between vineyards. Don't eat anything. He says, yeah, but mishum hashev avei labayil. Since we don't want to waste the time of the boss, we'll let you eat in between vineyards, plantations. It says, it's not such a great word, from row to row. Or when you're coming back from the wine press. Why? Because then you'll save time for the boss. Anything that will save time for the boss. So we see from here that you've got to be so productive to make sure that the boss gets his worth. Again, the boss has to make sure he pays you on time. He has a limit. He has about 12 hours from the time you finish working till the next 12 hours to pay you. Otherwise, he's in violation. Very strict law. There are rules for the boss. You can't afflict the workers. But there's also a rule for the worker. The worker has to work all his strength, the whole time, and can't sit there eating the whole time. Famous I Love Lucy's series where she was eating half the chocolate balls herself and nothing ever, didn't make it down the production line. All right. The Rambam says more over there. If you go back a little bit, he says, and with this regard, in all the cases, the sages said that one may eat only at the time of work, but do the obligation to restore lost property. Okay. That's what we mentioned before. Okay. Now, the Haggadot Maimonides was interesting. When the Rambam came out, his book made its way around the world. And of course, he was in Egypt, connected with Spain a little bit, and the Middle East. And then his book made its way to Germany. In Germany, there was a great mayor of Rothenburg, and he was a great scholar, and his students wrote the Haggadot Maimonides. They wrote some footnotes on the Rambam, on the Maimonides' Mishnah Torah, on his work, 14 volumes. And in each case, it would say, what did our rabbis in Germany or France, what did we Ashkenazic Jews say about what the Rambam says? So he says, let me tell you some more things about this topic, says the Haggadot Maimonides, perhaps from the mayor of Rothenburg. And you quote the Rav Yair over here, another rabbi from Germany. He says, look, in the Jerusalem Talmud, it says that Yochanan went to a place and he saw a teacher who was sick. And he said, what's wrong with you? What's wrong? He says, well, I fast a lot. I'm very religious. I'm very pious. I'm a really good teacher. I model for the children real piety. So I fast all day. And so he said to him, you are forbidden. You're not allowed to fast. For working with people, you can't. For God's work, certainly. When you work for let's say you work for FedEx, right? You work for FedEx, so you show up to that work every day. You say, oh, I'm sorry, I'm sick today. I have to take a sick day. And then you come the next day, you're working like half time because you can barely work. He says, what's wrong with you? He said, oh, I'm fasting all day. No. So the rabbis say, you're not allowed to do that. If you work from 9 to 5 for FedEx, you have to get a good night's sleep and you have to eat breakfast and supper and you have to come in ready to go. So when you're working for God, when you're doing God's work, namely when you're teaching the children. So he was a safer, because he's teaching the children. That's God's work. If you're doing God's work, then certainly you're forbidden to starve yourself and then be all sickly and weak and unable to perform your duties properly. And the Aviasaf, that's the Ravya, Eliezer ben Yoel, Halevi, who was one of the great rabbis around the time of Tosfot after Rashi in Germany, he said a teacher cannot stay up later than his bedtime. Then he usually stays up. And he can't even have too much food or drink. And he should just live a normal life. He shouldn't overdo it any direction. But the point is that this applies even to, let's say, a rabbi. So you want your rabbi to be holy. So I'm going to fast every Monday and Thursday, and I'm going to make sure I'm going to sleep on a bed of nails. And don't you want to have a rabbi who's very pious? Yeah, but if I'm being paid to do different things and teach classes or whatever it is, visit the sick, then I have to be healthy. I cannot say, oh, I'm so religious that I'm fasting all the time. That's very nice if you're not working for anybody. But if you are, that's not nice. That's bad news. Another source, and again, you notice the sources today are not like the Talmud. The sources today are from different midrashim, different sources, more obscure sources. I had to do more translating on my own. These things don't appear in translation. Tanya de Beliyahu. It's one of the midrashim. Whether it's actually from Elijah the prophet, I don't know. That I don't know, but it's associated with someone named Elijah. Whether it's Elijah the prophet or just one of the rabbis. But in any event, he says, if a person is always drinking wine and all that, it's a terrible thing. He's going to take himself out of this world. And quotes a verse in Habakkuk. Okay. Then he says, so that he quotes the verse in Mishlei, in Proverbs 22. It says, did you see a man assiduously working in his trade? And he talks about the value. Mishlei, Solomon talks about the value of hard work. Elsewhere in Mishlei, they talk about the look at the ant and see how assiduous he is. From here we say that a worker who got a job from his boss is obligated to do it the way the boss wanted it. And if he did not, the verse says, cursed is the man, who makes the work of God trickery. A verse in Jeremiah 48:10. If you're doing the work of God, don't make it into trickery. So certainly, going back to the previous case where someone's a teacher teaching Torah, he certainly is doing the work of God. He's turning it into trickery if he doesn't do his job, he's so tired he can't teach the children. But even in any profession, when you get a job, do it the way you're supposed to do it. All work is the work of God, according to this midrash. If you're doing the work of God, do it. Don't do it with trickery. If the boss says, plow the field, don't plow half the field. If he said, reap the grapes, don't leave half the grapes on the vine. Do what you're supposed to do. So here we talk about a new idea of doing it the way the boss wanted it. We talked about the Rambam, obscure sources. Well, what about the Shulchan Aruch? Does the Code of Jewish Law talk about this? Sometimes people say, some people, they keep the Shulchan Aruch, the Code of Jewish Law, but they need to know there are four volumes of the Code of Jewish Law. They need to know the fifth code is, ethics or whatever. It's not true. In this case, the idea of working ethically and working hard, it's in the Code of Jewish Law, in Choshen Mishpat, in the part that talks about business law, it's right there. He says, you cannot eat during a time of work. Obviously, if there's a lunch break, you eat during lunch. This is talking about the grape. The guy is reaping grapes, so he can only eat while he's doing work. But then he can't do the following. He can't say, look, I'm not eating any grapes. I'm plucking the grape, plucking, and I didn't eat anything all day. Now that I haven't eaten all day, now I'll sit down, a whole bunch of grapes, and eat them. No, you can't do that because we don't want you wasting time. Eat while you're working. You're hungry. You think the grapes look nice, look tasty. They're good grapes. Fine, enjoy them, but don't take a break. Keep working. And we know someone could easily justify in his mind. He says, "Well, I didn't. I was entitled to eat the grapes the whole time. So now that I didn't eat for the last 20 minutes." So now I'll take a break for 20 minutes. But it may not add up, right? It may turn out you should have just eaten on the run and while you were working, and then you'd be full and you wouldn't overeat and you'd get the work done because you're still working. Amucham, the sages said, however, if you finish one row, you could eat going to the next one because that would be advantageous because you're on your way from one row to the other. So you take a few grapes with you and eat them on the way as you go to the next row. That's fine. But nothing more than that, because you don't want to be mevatel the baal bayis. You don't want to waste time of the guy who's paying you. In a bowl of Rishon, now don't forget, when someone's paying you $5 an hour, so today it's $15 an hour, so those are $15 for the work of an hour. If you did 55 minutes of work, then you really stolen part of that hour. In a bowl of Rishon, it says there in Shulchan Aruch, you can't do work at night and hire yourself out during the day. You can't starve yourself and give your food allowance to your children. You're supposed to work yourself. You're supposed to eat yourself, whatever the boss gives you. You don't want to wait. You don't want to weaken yourself, so you won't be able to do the employer's work with strength. You won't have the strength. So again, the notion of strength is codified in the code of Jewish law. And the workers enjoined from wasting time, a bit here and a bit there, to be careful with the time. For the sages were careful not to say the fourth blessing of benching. So we'll get to that in a second. That the sages canceled the fourth blessing of benching if you're an hourly worker. And today we say, well, the worker doesn't, the boss doesn't mind. Or today people have long lunch breaks. But in the days when you said, well, you now have a break. How long is the break? Enough to eat and bench. So the rabbi said, well, you don't have to say the fourth blessing. It's not that important. We talked about it last week. So skip the fourth blessing. And also, you have to work with all of your strength because the Shulchan Aruch also quotes Jacob. Jacob, the righteous man, said, I worked for your father with all my strength. Therefore, he got rewarded to be very, very wealthy. What are we referring to that you can skip the fourth blessing if you're in the middle of work? So the sages taught in the Tosefta and an outside source in the Talmud, laborers who were working for a homeowner, for a baal bayis, are obligated to recite the Shema. Look, you're Jewish. You got to say the Shema. If it comes time for Shema and you're in the middle of work, you got to say Shema. Recite the blessings before and after it. There are certain blessings that go with the Shema. You got to say them. And when they eat their bread, they're obligated to recite the blessing before and after. Some say you didn't have to say the blessing before, but after. And they're obligated to recite the Amidah prayer. These are absolute obligations. However, they do not descend before the ark. You don't go daven with a minion. You're going to, oh, I have to go daven with a minion. No, you don't. You can daven by yourself. What do you mean? I'm a religious Jew. I have to go to the minion. No, you're working in the middle of work. Now, if you only work 8 hours a day, so you can work out and you go to the minion before the work or after the work. But if you work for a certain time, you don't have a right to say, oh, I have to go to the minion. No. And the priests, as communal prayers leaders, and the priests among them do not lift their hands to recite the priestly blessings. You don't have time. There's no time for Yivarechacha, Hashem, Yishma, all that priestly blessings. No time for that. So it was not to be derelict in the duties they were hired to perform. So again, this may not apply. Again, we try. Unfortunately, we've kind of canceled these laws. We say, oh, that doesn't apply anymore. If you have a religious boss, he surely is going to give you time to bench and, you know, to maybe have more liberal amount of time for eating lunch today. I don't know. But on the books, there is still this law that there are dispensations about davening with a minion and about benching if you are working on an hourly wage. Again, if you're given a project, you get this house built by next December. So then you can take as many lunch breaks as you want, as long as you get it done by December. But when you're getting paid for an hourly wage, that's a different story. Now, although we said that, you know, work is so important, you should do it with all so diligently, it's interesting that Rambam in the Mor Nevuchim, the Guides to Perplex, actually says that it's not quite what you think it is. So you think, oh, great, based on tonight's lecture, from now on, we should just work all day and we should train our children to be hourly workers and let them just work their head off like Jacob and they'll have the Protestant work ethic and they'll be great. This idea was propounded by many Zionists. The early Zionists were very much Torah v'avodah. You learn a little Torah and then you work. It was sort of a socialist communist idea that the workers, the power of work, and we should love work, and it was all about work. So Rambam says, well, hold your horses. Wait a second. He says, look, the forefathers, they would get engaged in a lot of different work. It's true, the patriarch Moses, they had their minds exclusively filled with the name of God. Even though the patriarchs were so involved, we therefore find them engaged in ruling others and increasing their property, endeavoring to obtain possession of wealth and honor. We find that Moses and David, they were all involved in, you know, making a living and working hard. So he said, we see that as a fact. So he says, they occupied these things only with their bodies, whilst their heart and mind never moved away from the name of God. So don't think that we said today that what you should do is you should go be a worker and just focus on work all day. He said, while they were doing their work, they were really thinking about God. It's an interesting question. You know, how can, does the Rambam over here and the Rambam there, does it work together? We said before, you have to work with all your heart. And now he's saying, your heart should really be thinking about God. So what do you think? How could you bring these two ideas together? What do you think? The Rambam in the law book says that whenever you work, you have to work with your whole heart. The Rambam in his philosophy book, in the Guides of Reflex, says that when you're working, when the truly righteous people like Abraham and Moses and David, when they were doing their work, they were really thinking about God. But can you do your work with all your strength if you're thinking about God? What's the answer?
If you're working with machinery, you cannot be thinking about anything except what you're doing with that machine. You can be as religious as you want, but when you're zeroing in on the slicer or whatever, you better be thinking about the slicer instead of, you know,
you're really just fortifying the question. The Rambam didn't say that. The Rambam says when you're dealing with a sheep, you got to think about God. But as Charlie says, you could, God forbid, you could lose your finger. You got to focus on what you're doing.
I'm not going to argue with the Rambam.
Work with all your strength. That's the question.
He was a little smarter than me.
Right. So you don't have to argue with him. We're just asking you to try to resolve the question. What's the answer?
Well, you should always be thinking about being a good person.
Right. So let me use that answer like this. You're saying, you know what it means to think about God when you're working? To think about your work, to do the Jewish work ethic, do the Jacobian work ethic. If while you're working, you're thinking about your work, then you're doing the godly thing. Then you're focused on God. You remember this Rambam. You're doing your work and you're remembering the Rambam. Don't forget to work with all your might. Any other ideas?
Just try to incorporate Hashem through your work. Like, Hashem, please don't let me cut my finger off.
Okay, you're going to use prayer. You're going to use prayer to connect, right?
Yeah.
That while you're working, you pray.
You got to have a lot of kavana when you're praying. You can't be praying while you're slicing. I mean,
you can pray. Pray, God, help me in my own slice my finger off. I mean, it doesn't have to be very long. To say Shimon S, right? I know. So I think you could suggest several suggestions. One idea would be that, firstly, we're dealing with ultra pious people who you can't understand. They could have one part of their mind is doing this and one part is doing that. They say there are people who can talk to you, have wonderful conversation, but they're really thinking about the Rambam and the God.
Right.
They don't run the slicer.
Second possibility is that we're talking about not a slicer, but we're talking about sheep, that they had professions which allowed for contemplation. And that's why it seems that they were all shepherds, because, you know, shepherds is kind of quiet and nobody says anything. And the only people there are sheep. And, you know, you can sort of, you know, think about life and stuff. So that's another possibility. And as you said, another possibility is that you could bring God to whatever, through to the work, whether if you're doing work for charity. So You think about that. That's God, is through the charity. If you're working with people, you think about how they're created in the image of God. If you're working some grungy job, you think about how you have the Jacobian work ethic, which is part of the Torah. So yeah, there are many ways of bringing God into the most grungy type of work.
So find a profession.
But anyway, it's an interesting challenge to think about.
Find a profession where you can incorporate Hashem more than a slicer.
So good. Another
idea. We do need our slicer.
Where you can either think about both, or that somehow it has a token.
That was a bad example.
Sorry?
Tractors.
Okay. Dr. Brooks?
I just said that we need our slicers too, so don't diss our slicers there. We need our people that slice up things for us.
That's right. So yes, don't forget the value of service, of doing service for others. So if someone is providing kosher meat for everyone in the community, or you know, just if in a Gentile world providing meat for people, that's a great service. So can't make light of that either. So there's no job that's
or
not,
make your study
some function.
Make your study more hours than your slicing.
Okay, that's good. That's another way of doing it. Right. Well, that doesn't quite resolve this contradiction. He was saying that while they were working, they were thinking about God. But yes, clearly there are many people who work a very serious 9-to-5 job, if not longer, but they give a tremendous amount of time to Torah study. It can be done. There's plenty of time in the evening or early morning, and people finish Daf Yomi, and they do all kinds of learning. And, you know, many, many people, we know them. They live right here in the community. It can be done. Moving along. So that was an interesting question. Moving along to Mechilta Rav Shimon Bar Yochai. Another Mechilta we mentioned, Rav Shimon Bar Yochai from Devarim, Deuteronomy. Now we're back in Exodus, and it says as follows in chapter 20, in the Ten Commandments. It says, 6 days you should work. So Rebbe says something that maybe you never thought about. Just like there's a mitzvah to do Shabbos, to rest on the seventh day, there's a mitzvah to work on the 6 days. So we talked about work as a value. Rebbe talks about work as a mitzvah. Now, for whatever reason, you could say, unfortunately, whatever, this is not codified as one of the 613 mitzvahs. But clearly, it does say 6 days you shall work. Now, some people would say 6 days you should work. It's what everybody does. There's no mitzvah there. God's not telling you to do it. Everybody does it. It's like God says, eat and bless God. So is there a mitzvah to eat? Everybody eats. The mitzvah is to bless God. Everybody works. The mitzvah is to stop working. But Rebbe is claiming that working is also a mitzvah. And then the Midrash goes on that when the Jews worked so hard to make the Mishkan, the tabernacle, that's when God rested on them. So it's only through work that God rests on you. Or that that when people die, usually before they die, they're not doing anything. They reach an old age, they have Alzheimer's, and they're not doing anything. So we see that death comes through nothingness, through lack of work. It's not blaming anybody, but that's how death comes. It's lack of work is like death. Rabbi Akiva says, look, no one's allowed to benefit from holy things. If you have, let's say, a sacrifice, let's say I decide this sheep is going to the temple. Well, you can't come over and say, oh, that's beautiful sheep. Let me just shear a little bit off. I want to make a sweater. Wait, this sheep belongs to the temple. I can't give you any. So that there's a special law. It's called Me'ilah. But if you're a worker in the temple, you know where you get paid from? The money that people donate to the temple. But that's holy money. How could you take that money and give it to this guy? He's going to go home and buy a sandwich. He says, yes, if you're a worker, you get that holy money and you get to buy a sandwich with it. And you get to get paid for your work because workers are very important. And finally, this is one that my father had taught me years ago, Alav Shalom, that Reb Shimon says, work is amazing because nobody can go in the Holy of Holies ever. Only a Kohen Gadol, the high priest, and only a Yom Kippur. And only while he's working, while he's doing the official service. But if someone needs to repair the walls, the floor, the ceiling of the Beis HaMikdash, even of the Holy of Holies, he goes in a box and he repairs it. So wait, it's not Yom Kippur. It's okay. The wall's falling, the wallpaper's falling off. the gold is falling off, you got to redo it. You go in, maybe they put you in a box or whatever, but you do go in to the Holy of Holies. And we had a debate at the end of the Gemara in Erevin. We just finished Erevin the other day. There was a debate at the end of the tractate of Talmud. Do you have to use a Kohen? Could you use a non-Kohen? A Kohen who has a blemish? All kinds of discussions if the Kohen is impure. Anyway, there are different opinions. But some say that even a non-Kohen could go in and repair the Beis HaMikdash. So very serious laws on the book for workers. Workers are important. That's how great work is. That's how beloved. That's how great work really is. There are other midrashim. He says, happy is one who makes with his lot, who's happy with what he has. He works and then he's happy with whatever he has and makes a living from his work. It's a good value to make a living from your work, not from an inheritance, not from the work that you do. For with this good trait, you will be saved from several sins, from jealousy, coveting, and stealing. You see, if you don't work, you don't have money. If you don't have money, then you might covet, you might be jealous, you might steal. So it saves us from these other things. Or in this other list of, you know, reasons that working is so great, he says, so there's some of the things here appear in the other sources. This is Avot to Rabbi Nathan. This is another version of Pirkei Avot, an expansion of Pirkei Avot written later on. He says, when you don't work, people talk about you. They say, wait a minute, how does that guy make a living? How did he buy that house? He doesn't even work, right? How does he have that car? He doesn't work, right? People talk about you. You don't want people talking about you. So therefore it's good to work and people won't talk about you.
Somebody asked me that. Hey, you ever been able to support yourself without, help? Somebody asked me that, and I've been thinking about that for years. It was a dirty question.
Yeah, it's a very humiliating question. But the fact is, people are people, and they ask dumb questions. They say dumb stuff. And
well, I wanted to say I play my ass off. I've always made a living, you know.
Some people have to be the givers, and some people have to be the
receivers. We talked about clean yeah. language earlier.
Yes. You got to remember the lessons.
Sorry, everybody.
I'm sorry.
Some people have to be the givers, and some people have to be the receivers, and that can flip in your life. You know, everybody has a purpose.
We have tzedakah for a reason.
Now, some people are not able to work. Some people try to work, but there's no work to be found. So we're not minimizing anyone who couldn't find work or whatever. And then, there is an interesting debate in the Talmud about women. Generally, when a man marries a woman, so he provides all kinds of stuff, she's expected to do some work with her hands, like weaving and things. So they say, what if a woman has everything? She brings into the marriage 20 servants in those days. Today, let's say, extra help. And she's got everything that the husband could need. She provides for it financially. So does she still need to work? So some of the rabbis said, then she doesn't have to work. And one of the rabbis said, no, if she doesn't work, she's going to have an affair. She's not going to have anything to do. So there's an interesting question of the role of women regarding work. But the general assumption was not the modern assumption of right-wing Christians that women don't work. Rather, the assumption was that women did work. That was the
arrangement of marriage. Housework is very, very difficult.
But in any event,
clean. Housework can be really tiring.
Right. That's part of it. Right. That, when we say that women were expected in ancient times to work, right, in those days, the line between housework and not housework was fine because, let's say, doing laundry, you had to go outside to do it. Canning your fruit for the winter. You know, it was a lot of hard work. But in any event, let's continue. What else does the other Rabbi Nathan say? He says,
sorry about my street language. One day I'll learn.
Okay, your apology accepted. Rabbi Yehuda says, the work is great because if you have work, you won't be, very obvious point, but you won't be missing, you won't be at a loss for money. Another idea is that Misha Asian, he says, so one rabbi makes a very strong statement. Again, it's an exaggeration, don't get too carried away. But he says like this, if it doesn't work, he's going to be obligated for his life, meaning life, it'll be taken away. I said, what are you talking about? He says, look, on Monday, he didn't work. So he has nothing to eat. So then he had a little bit of money that he promised to give to the temple. So he decides, I'll eat that. And then what's the rule? If you steal money from the temple, then God is going to get you. So it turns out, how did he lose his life? Because he didn't work. So that's an extreme example of the value of work. The point is, rabbis are trying to emphasize the value of work. Again, those who can't, if you can't. But it's just preaching to promote the notion of work. Okay, it continues. If you don't do any work during the week, maybe you'll end up doing it on Shabbos. He says, why? He says, you didn't work on Sunday. You didn't work on Monday. You have nothing to eat. And then he robs somebody. And then they put him in jail. And they make him do work on Shabbos. Why is he working on Shabbos? Because he didn't do work during the week. So again, this is not to oversimplify the issue. Obviously, there's unemployment. There's all kinds of things, situations where people are unable to work, disability. But in a broad sense, not working could lead to bad things. And that's why, that's one of the modern Orthodox arguments against the ultra-Orthodox, is that it's cruel. If you teach your child Talmud and Midrash, and wonderful, that's what the ultra-Orthodox community is very good at teaching Torah to the children. They do a great job. But you don't teach them math and reading and science, et cetera, and get them a job. And Israel, you have to, people go into computers, different fields, science. If you don't teach them that, then the children may land out not only living off the dole, but they may land out stealing. It's an ethical problem. Any event, what else? Then he says, Rebbe Eliezer says, it was great because if you stole from your friend even one penny, you have to make amends. You have to go, if he lives in France, you have to fly to France to give him back his penny. But if a worker is working with figs in the fig field, so then, even if one of the figs is worth $25, he can eat the figs because he's working. When you're working, you're allowed to eat the figs. So, but generally, you can't even steal one penny. But when you're working, you have certain license. You have certain benefits. So we see how great work is, et cetera, et cetera. Then he says that work is so great, I think it's found in the Talmud somewhere, that people like to praise themselves by their work. What do we mean? Somebody is a weaver. Let's say he's a weaver. So he takes the weaving hook, puts it behind his ear. He walks down the street and they say, oh, there goes the weaver. Why is he wearing this? Isn't he ashamed that he works as a weaver? No, he's proud of it. He's wearing his weaver thing on his ear. So God too is proud of his work because he calls it his work. He calls the work of the creation, he calls it his work. And Rebbe goes one step further. And here it relates to the idea of housework that Charlie was talking about. What about housework? Is housework work? He says, look, work is so important that if all you have is a little garden, right? You should go and work in the garden, do some work. And they said to him, there was a story of Rabbi Yoshia who used to clean his clothes before Shabbos, take out the lice, and he would straighten out his clothes before Shabbos. And he would take them from over here and put them over there. And they said, Rabbi, why are you working so hard? You're running busy work. You're going from here to there. What are you doing? He says, I want to work right up till Shabbos. Now, of course, you'd be careful. If you work right up to Shabbos, you might end up violating Shabbos. But what he would do is he would do some minor work right before Shabbos so that when Shabbos started, then he would get started. Now, he's supposed to add to Shabbos. So they assume, presumably, he added a few minutes before Shabbos started. But at that point, he says, okay, I declare now is Shabbos. And right before that, he worked. He wanted to work right up to the last minute. So it's also somewhat of a reflection of the value of work. And going back to Jacob, he said, I worked often, scorching heat ravaged me by day and the frost by night, and sleep fled from my eyes. So why did sleep flee from his eyes? So he says, seeing that I did not want to entrust a flock to another shepherd, I was forced to endure the sun's heat by day and the extreme cold at night. I denied myself sleep at night for fear something could happen to any of the animals. Right? He was afraid of it. He was watching the whole time. However, there's another idea. The Midrash Seichel Tov says, when a person thinks at night about his calculations, he can't sleep. And so Jacob said, tomorrow, maybe a wild animal will attack my sheep. Therefore, his sleep was stolen. In other words, was he sleepless because he was literally guarding the sheep at day and at night? Or no, he was guarding the sheep during the day. But part of being a diligent worker is that you can't sleep at night. Again, you're supposed to sleep in order to be fresh the next morning for work. But sometimes you can't sleep because you're worried about work. And you know what? That's part of work. So next time you can't sleep because of work, you say to yourself, oh, it's good. That means I'm a diligent worker. I can't sleep because I'm worried about something from work. That means that I'm diligent about it. And that's a good thing because you're supposed to be diligent about work. Again, it's good to get sleep and try to relax and all that. But to some degree, someone's up at night worrying about work. It shows he's Jacobian. He's like Jacob, like Yaakov. He's worried about his work. And finally, he says, I mentioned before that, you know, if that was just torn by beasts, I never brought it to you. I myself made good for the loss. You exacted of me whether it was snatched by day or snatched by night. So Rashi said, I paid everything back. It was stolen during the day, at night. However, the simple meaning is genuvti yom, genuvti la. I was stole my day, I stole my night. So Rashi says, whatever was stolen at night, I paid for it. So the Ibn Balam was a obscure medieval commentator who's recently been brought back to light. He says, now it just means he worked by day and night. He worked literally day and night. Which again, it's a mixed blessing because then, you know, how well can you work if you're working day and night? But the point was that he worked as hard as possible.
Could that mean that he was just a light sleeper and any little thing that he heard, any little stirring, he was wide awake? That's what it seems like to me. He had to have
He's making an argument. No, he's making it. You have to know the context, John. He's talking to his father-in-law. His father-in-law says, you stole something. He says, stole something? I worked so diligently for you. I would stay up at night, not because I'm a light sleeper. I would stay up at night because I was worrying about your stuff. I'm very diligent. Why would I steal something? I never stole anything for 20 years.
But his daughter did.
I think that's the context. You're right, right, right. That was the irony that with all of Jacob's outrage, his wife stole it. That was the irony. Very good. Now, finally, the result. What's the result of the work ethic? And let's say somebody works very hard. What is the ethical value of that? Someone works hard. What is you supposed to work hard? You're supposed to be a beast, like you're supposed to be like a donkey, you just keep working all day. So he says, no. We alluded to it before that if a person works all the time, then he won't have to steal. And that's what comes out in next week's parsha, not this week, but the following week, Vayishlach. We know Yaakov was left alone, and the angel fought with him, and then Jacob beat the angel, except he limped on his leg, right? So the question is, why was Jacob alone? He had a huge family and a lot of slaves. How could he be alone? So Rashi says he forgot something. He forgot small jars, and he returned for them. Small jars? He's a wealthy man. He forgot a few jars? That's why he went back? So the whole family went this way. And then he forgot a few jars, he went back. Why would you go back for a few jars? And it was foolish because sure enough, someone attacked him. He's all by himself. He had no guardians. So it doesn't make sense, right?
Yes, it does. He worked hard for everything he had.
Correct. So that's the famous Rashi that Charles is well aware of. And if it comes from, I want to show you the Gemara in Chulin. The Gemara in Chulin says that Jacob was by himself. Rabbi Eliezer says he came back for small vessels. Why? We see from here that to the righteous people, Their money is valuable to them more than their body. He didn't care if he got killed. He had to go back. Why? Why are they so extreme? If he ain't posting the other day and begets him. Because he never steals anything, every penny he has, he values it because he worked hard for it and he killed himself for it. So if you work your head off for it, then you surely value it and therefore, you appreciate everything you have. The Chidah was a mystic, and he added another element to it. He said that the great Ari, the great mystic in Tzfat, said that money comes from that which God gives you and decides to give you from heaven. And since it comes from above, we're very careful not to treat it lightly. If God gave me the enough money so I could buy this nice pillow, then I shouldn't just say, get another one. I got plenty of money. I'll just stand on the pillow because I need to climb someplace and just ruin the pillow. No, if God gave me the money to have this pillow, I should take good care of the pillow because God gave this to me as a blessing from God that I have this. This is a way of thinking about everything that we have as well. So this is the Jacobian work ethic. It's by day and by night. It's a law in the Shulchan Aruch. The Rambam brings it. It's a law to work as efficiently as you can, to do the things that you're supposed to be doing in your job, to work, to even give some of your night time to think about it, to worry about it. You don't want to overdo it at night. You want to be prepared to get to work and be fresh and do the work properly. And we said that that the Torah in so many different ways values the idea of work and considers it a holy calling. And Jacob, even the chidush over here, the new idea here, of course, if Jacob was some money hungry guy, so sure. But since we assume no, you look at the end of the parsha, Jacob bumped into the angels. Angels follow him around all the time. There's something very holy about him. He's a holy man. So what is he getting involved in watching sheep for 20 years? How could he do that? How could he even tolerate such nonsense? And the answer is that no, work is never nonsense. That work is always an honor, and is nothing shameful about work. And on the contrary, it's a great honor and a great responsibility. And it's what we're here for. That's part of being human, is to work. Sometimes it keeps us up at night. Sometimes it's not so much fun, but that's part of our diligence and our responsibility. And when we work, in one way or another, and again, it could be in your own garden. It could be like, you know, straightening up your house. You're right, Charlie. When we do some stuff, then it ennobles us, and it makes us more contemplative about what we've achieved, and not to treat anything lightly, but to recognize the blessings of everything God has given us through this hard work. So I think we made a strong argument that in Judaism, there is a work ethic. And it's a very strong value, and the Rambam codified it. The Shulchan Aruch, the Code of Jewish Law, codified it, and something we should bear in mind as we work. And even if whatever particular circumstance of life, we're not in a working state at the moment, it can also be just something we realize that there's this Jewish value of work, not only of all the spiritual things we do, but also simple work is also valued as well. Some would, in Salvezic writing, sometimes you see that he kind of expands the idea of work to, you know, intellectual work, where you say someone comes up with a new idea, like Salvezic comes up with new ideas, and that's also a type of creative work. You know, art could be a work, music. There are things that are not classic work in the terms that we were speaking of today, more physical labor, but a lot of intellectual work can be work as well. And we do refer to, you know, some of our work for God as work as well. It's a type of work, avodas Hashem. The worship of God overlaps with the idea of work. So there's some spiritual work that can be done as well during the week and on Shabbos as well. All right, those are my thoughts for tonight. Any questions or comments?
Thank you. That was fantastic.